Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I'm an SWB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just my hour joins my talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone system style 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the talk show website at www.talkshow.com and search for call ID 17702. Or SFU on call, or Starfleet Universe on call. You'll find us there. But of course, if you want the best online experience, you go to twitch.tv, that's twitch.tv/SFU on call, and you will find us there. You'll be able to join the chat room and have a wonderful time there with the other people in the chat room. Moving on, moving forward, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, my Twitter account there is sfuoncall. Also, you can follow my personal account. That's Paul Franz, PAULFRNZ. There is no T in that. And also, if you want to follow my business account, which is Franz Games, go to FRNZGMES. Again, there's no T in that. And of course, this lovely talkcast gets into podcasts available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Quick news, maybe, you know, Steve Patrick is still busy working on Orion Master Starship book. I'm not sure where he is in that. Have not heard any updates on it, so I'm assuming he's continuing to work on it diligently. Moving onward, on the found on the online store for this week, we have a Call of Arms Starfleet Book 1.2 Deluxe Edition. That's That's $29.95. Now, the important thing for this edition is that you must have it to play with the Call of Arms Starfleet Book 2. Because, lo and behold, you know, it's one of those things that the 1.2 is not, you know, it's, yeah, the version, but version 2 is just an expansion on the original. Now, of course, lovely, this is... A Call of Arms Starfleet is a game of special space combat in the Starfleet universe. Throughout the humanity's space age history, the United Federation of Planets has explored the octet of space it is in, but has come under pressure from enemies who sometimes become friends, other times it is war. Now, you can play out these confrontations on your tabletop with fleets from the Federation, the Klingon Empire, the Romulan Empire, and many other empires, including pirates. Yes, arg, pirates. Found in the Alpha Octant. From skirmishes with a few destroyers to clashes with large fleets, the Call of Arms Starfleet is what is needed to make your own history and test your own skills. Choose from Federation, Klingon, Romulan, Zinni, Gorn, Tholian, and the Orion Pirates. You can protect convoys on shipping, civilian shipping, or choose to fight one of the included scenarios or create your own. You can even run a campaign using Call to Arms. Then a reminder, you need that if you want to get Starfleet, a Call of Arms Starfleet Book 2, which will probably be my found the online store next week. This kind of preview there. When it comes to SWB Online Tournament, Sapphire Star 16 Tournament, well, guess what? Round 1 is complete because my game is complete and, well, I lost. Got completed in 11 turns. I survived for that long. Definitely we're going to have to do a review over that in this upcoming podcast. So keep tuned for that. Also obviously round one's complete. Also round two, we already have one of the games complete. So we already have matchup for the semifinals. Obviously when it comes to, the other side of the bracket to the winner, again, in my game, Jeff Clark, he now goes on to fight Peter Bakia, which is going to be a Hydran versus the Romulan Firehawk. So that should be an interesting battle. Obviously, the big issue with the Hydrant is going to be Mizzia. So hopefully Peter can survive it. It's going to be a little different played, I think it should be played differently. Though, obviously, the interesting part about that is that the Hydrant also has the two phaser Gs, like the LDR, but, of course, the Kelp. You have those nice little things called Hellbores, which the and of course you have the floating nuclear space mines, which are his fighters. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to the library, there's been no updates when it comes to SFB library or the FedCom library. So with that is the news for this week. It's me, it's the Millennial Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
And we also have Barry. Hey, Barry.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing
hey,
good.
Paul.
Yeah. I'm here, and you're here, which is good. Okay, and boom. Setting up my little iPad monitor over there so I can keep an eye out and see what I'm actually streaming. Because every once in a while, I'm streaming not what I expect to stream. So, but anyway, moving on forward. So, let me switch to this. And actually, I need to do this first. Just a quick update on my game, which I lost. Just spoiler alert there. This is where we ended, which is it was actually kind of interesting, and this is completely him, and I come around, I'm going kiss my loving butt. Come around here and so forth. And then on what I do is I actually, I did a stomp and then, it was right here where I started a stomp so I could actually, tacking. I can do two tacks. And then mid-turn speed changed to speed 10. Well, what happened on last turn was that, actually not, was it last turn or turn before? It was turn 9, actually turn 9, so it was two turns ago. So I do that thing that I do mid-turn speed change, and after the mid-turn speed change, he launches a plasma torpedo at me. A 60-point plasma torpedo. I have my last Wild Weasel, so what do? I launch the last Wild Weasel. Oh, yeah. Before we get there, actually, let me back up one from last week's, because last week we were discussing the whole issue of where I was previously in that I was 3 hexes behind him. We were basically heading off in opposite directions, and I was debating whether going for speed or stopping and tacking and then running off. I ended up deciding I did a tack and then I went to speed 10 because of that still limits me for the beginning of the turn. Like my max speed is going to be speed 10, but after that I can go speed 20, and that's going to be as fast as I'm probably going to be going anyway. So it's not like I need to go like greater speed 20 at that point. So anyhow, I did my tacks, and I got around, it was a range four attack on a shield number 4. And I did a, unfortunately, here's I think where the gotcha to the hurt the one thing that hurt me, that finally killed me, which is that I only hit with three out of four. Sorry, no, I only hit two out of three overload disruptors because one of my disruptors was dead at that moment. It had been killed the previous turn, so I had no way of repairing it in time to have to fire four overloaded disruptors. So I fired three disruptors and I think it's four phaser ones. Yeah, three overloaded disruptors and four phaser ones at his rear shield. Unfortunately, I missed with one disruptor. And because I missed one disruptor, I only got three internals. And the three internals basically were two, I think it was two center, whoops, back, bring it back. Two center warp here and something else. But because of that, I feel like that cost me the game. Because of this. Okay, we got here, and what happened is that he decided when he came around here and launched a plasma torpedo, he ended, he started the turn with zero. And when he did that, he then, instead of coming forward, he basically went in reverse. So that, his good shields were facing. Actually, I did a lot of this damage to shield number six, I think it was. Yeah. And so I never, obviously, I didn't get through, but I had to fire anyway. And at this point, he was going negative nine, basically. He launched, this is his final involved with plasma torpedo. This is on turn 11. And unfortunately, I could not, even if I would have been able to kill one of his torpedoes this turn, it was all over. Because of he got the launched the one, killed my wild weasel, and then he just had to launch another one and killed me. Now, one thing is, as I said, I think the critical thing here for why I lost at this point was that I didn't hit with that extra overloaded disruptor. If I would have hit with extra overloaded disruptor, I feel confident in saying that I most probably would have gotten a torp hit. Still, I understand that even if I would have gotten the internals, the extra eight internals, sorry, yeah, extra eight internals, that's still not guaranteed I would have gotten the torp. But I feel like that if I would have gotten that torp, that would give me the opportunity to knock down the shields and actually do the inflict the damage that I need to inflict to take out his other torp. And after I knock out his other torp, then I would have won the game. Because if I would knock down both the torps, then he's got real thing on his hands. Now, obviously, the biggest issue for me still would have been his phasers. He could still phaser me and give me some internals and slowly, decrease the number of weapons that I have one at a time. So, the one thing I did do this past turn, at the end of turn 10, I repaired two phaser ones as phaser threes so that I had some extra padding for my phasers. And lo and behold, it got hit, but after the developer, because what I did is while I was facing up, that I used both my phaser Gs to phaser down the enveloper, so it didn't do as much internal damage. But given that I had three down shields, and the total number of boxes left on the rest of the shields was like 10 boxes. Obviously, I did some. I had some mighty bit of reinforcement on shield number four, so that I still had a shield at the end. It's just that at at the end, I had four power, one disruptor, and three phaser ones. But I felt like at that point, I was toast. Because, as I said, I would have had to have them down to one torpedo. If I had them down to one torpedo, I wouldn't have gotten hit this turn by that plasma torpedo. And I feel like I could have won at that point. Now, if we want to go back a little bit, and that is the initial, I want to say mistake, but I'm not quite sure it was a mistake. And that is, I got cornered here. There. Sorry, the local Zinni is around and he's looking to see if he can join me. What is Goofball? Yeah, I'm sure he wants to join me. We'll have to wait and see it on that. But anyway, and that point, it was either take 50 points of torpedoes or Wild Weasel. And I chose to use Wild Weasel. And after that point, I was constantly trying to build up my speed and never could because it kept on throwing torpedoes at me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speed is life with that ship.
Yep.
That's basically it.
And that's the problem because the question was that I could have knocked down probably the F, but I would have had a 30 points taken, in which case I would have been able to keep up the speed, but I would have had to basically take a whole shield down. And the thing is, he was always launching a lot of, after that, he kept on launching envelopers. And when he kept on launching envelopers, I had the choice, which is either try to phaser it down and take all the shield damage, or and keep my speed up, or use a Wild Weasel. And for the next two times, I chose Wild Weasel. It wasn't until the last time that I chose on, I realized I was fighting a losing battle, and I couldn't keep doing this. So I finally, I took it and I kept on going after him. This is when I actually was able to, you can see it a little bit here, but I was able to basically use my ESGs and corner him and then pin him against the wall and hit him with the ESGs, in which case I was able to take down the shield number 5 and do quite a bit of internals. Now, to be brutally honest about this, there on turn number, I'm thinking about this for a moment. I think it was 8 or 9, basically when I pinned him. He launched a 30-point torpedo. Now, the funny part to me was he had a choice. And he chose something that I totally did not expect, which was he had a choice of going after, having the torpedo come right down my throat against my basically down shield number 1, or go against my shield number 2. And he went against my shield number 2. Now, my guess at this moment in time is that he thought that I would use my phasers to go against the shield, against the plasma instead of his ship. And I didn't do that. I used my one phaser G to go against the plasma. I took the phaser ones and I fired that against his ship. So, this was that. Fatal movement was the same impulse where I basically slammed the ESG against him. And of course, because it's an ESG, it's whatever, it's going to be the facing shield. So I got the, hit him with the ESG, and then my disruptors and my phasers knocked down his shield. Now, the biggest issue that I had, of course, is power. Most of the game, I overloaded two disruptors, and two of them were standards. Now, did I always get into to overload range? Mostly not. You know, because of I was going so slow. But I was hoping he'd come in closer so I could fire overload. Now, I did, in my mind, when it comes to doing that, I also made a mistake in that I didn't fire my standard disruptors as often as I should. So there were certain turns where I had the disruptors in arc, but I did not fire them, so I had discharged some standard disruptors at the end of the turn. So, you know, that was possible wasted shield damage, which could have been later on used to get internals. Now, don't remember exactly what shield was facing me. I'm not sure it was shield 5 or shield 6 or whatever when the disruptors were in arc. But, you know, I think that was also a minor mistake that I did, just, you know, waste of power there. Now, should I kept on doing standard and overloads? Probably not, but I wasn't sure what he was going to do. I was always thought he was going to come in closer, and he never did. He mainly launched the plasma and stay outside close range as much as possible. But yeah, he would he get into range 8? Yeah, sometimes he would. He got to range 8 late in the game, and then when he got late in the game, late in the turn is what I meant. Late in the turn, that's when I decide that, you know, I'm not going to fire my disruptors because it's late, and if I fire him now, he'll have an opportunity to be closer in, and I won't be able to get my disruptors to hit him, you know, before he comes in too close. So to say the very least, it was a long game. It was 11 turns. It took quite a few weeks to get completed, mainly because of Jeff Clark is in Japan. And because he's in Japan, most of the time we had to work around basically his schedule, which for him, he's usually available right before work, which means 7 a.m. his time, 5 p.m. my time. So we could play for like an hour, possibly 2 hours, and get things done. But it took us, what, around 6 sessions, if not more, to get it all done. You know, we played multiple times, you know, during the week. So it was a good game. What?
Oh, sorry. I thought I was muted.
No, you're not muted.
You okay?
I'm assuming so. So with that, you know, obviously, well, when I find out, okay, the one thing that I must have, okay, I like the LDR, I like the speed. I definitely, when it comes against a Fed, I would not like the ship at all.
Because it's great against the Fed.
What?
It's great against the Fed. As long as you don't get overrun or jackpotted by them, you're fine.
Well, that's.
The thing is, it's essentially a speed ship, and every time you stop, or you're spending whole turns going less than speed 20, you're literally throwing away the biggest tactical advantage you have with that ship. It's a Jaguar. It's when they put the name Jaguar in there, it's like it is like a Jaguar, like the car. It's mm-hmm. meant to be driven fast and maneuver around your opponent constantly. The only thing that I could tell from the what you were showing us is that really the opponent had the benefit of negating that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is what it is. So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
He did well.
Yes.
He did very well. You got to keep your, you got to dictate which shields you shot a lot, which is a huge thing. So if you get multiple passes on a weak then down shield, or if you can get a good overrun in between his main weapon cycles, that's a win for you. But
yeah.
if he manages to dictate the terms of the maneuver, he's going to win. He attrited you down, and he got you with an enveloper after getting all your shields down.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, as it is, most of his torps...
He played to his strengths.
Yep. Most of the plasma S's he launched were envelopers. He played a really long enveloper game.
Yeah, and you have to commit to that.
Yeah.
And he committed to it, and it worked for him because you weren't able to outrun them.
Yep.
Because you're going too slow. And it's like the years that I played that ship, I don't remember. I probably did at some point, but I generally don't remember ever weaseling with it. So
that ship actually doesn't want to weasel. What you want to do is you want to use two suicide shuttles on that ship.
Yeah,
oh, understood.
On your overrun. Yeah. Absolutely.
Understood. You know, I got cornered.
But this is all... This is all post Monday morning, well, Thursday night quarterbacking.
Yeah. Yeah, because I came around here. He came down this way and cornered me down in the lower portion of the map. And that's when he launched his 50 plasma torpedoes, you know, one left and one S towards me. And there was no way he came up this direction, and I had no way to get past those torpedoes, because I was not going. I'm not sure why. I think, basically, I didn't have enough speed. I don't think even speed would have helped at that point, because he launched it when it was like what four round. Range like I think it was like four.
You gave up the speed initiative. You totally gave up the speed initiative. So yeah, you were toast at that point. Yeah, he did what he had to do.
Yeah, agreed.
And his strategy paid off.
Mm-hmm.
And he managed to sort of minimize your advantages, but you also helped him when you didn't go as fast and keep the speed up. So, there's that. Oh.
Understood.
Something something monsters, I think. What's that? Oh, okay.
Yeah. I've been talking about monsters. Actually, the one that I want to talk about tonight, which actually it's interesting. I'm just going to bring up the game real fast. I just want to look at the EA for a moment. Bum, bum, bum. Got the opponent. This is the opponent's EA. You know, looks like load them as started with them as G's. Like two. Okay, then a developer here, developer here, developer here. Yeah. But mine, okay, where's mine? Mine's here. Whoop, no, that's the SSDs. My EAs. There, yeah. Turn three. Yeah, that's where. This one, yeah, I was going speed 21. I started at speed 24 and then decreased to speed 21. That's when I
died.
That's when I got cornered. Was on turn two. And then, you know, then I started up with speed zero, then go to speed 10, and then next one, 10, 20, and then 19 on turn four, and then turn five, I would speed 8, 4, and then back to 13. The idea there was that because he was so close, I was gonna need to launch the Wild Weasel, and the idea was to anticipate the use of the Wild Weasel, and then so I could keep up my speed as much as possible. So turn six.
Yeah, but like Barry said, and like I said, you don't want a weasel with that ship. That's a dying strategy.
Understood, but. Yeah.
It's something you might do with the Fed or the Gorn or anybody else that can take some internals, but you don't ever want to stop with that ship.
Understood. Unless, well, I got cornered. I didn't see any way out of it. You know, I was at that point, I'm not sure if I was going speed 20. Well, I was going probably speed 21 at that point.
So.
And speed 21, you know, he cornered me, and so I had no way out. So, anyway, onward and forward, on to the SAB monster for tonight, which is the Death Probe. To me, I was actually reading through the rules of this this monster. Nasty beast. Basically, it's a ship with no energy allocation. You have to. It's a player. It's not automated. It's played by a player. And it requires two players. One's a Death Probe player. And has weapons, you know, two phaser fours, 6-photon torpedoes, 6 phaser 1s, 2 phaser Gs, and 2 drone racks. With an unlimited type 1s, not necessary to reload, and able to launch 1 drone per turn. The Death Probe has unlimited seeking weapon control. And it can fire photon torpedoes every turn. There is no recharge turn. With whatever legal status or fusing, the Death Probe wishes at the instant of shooting. So he doesn't even have to plan that. And the Death Probe never receives feedback damage. To me, the interesting part about this nasty little guy, one, it has these weapons. And you have to do 6 out of points of damage to half that. Now, and also Death Probe can repair 20 points of damage itself each turn, but can never have more than 800 points of damage, and cannot begin any such repair until the turn following it actually had the damage. So 20 points of repairs are added to Death Probe's current total points at the end of each term they're used. But you have to do at least 6-7 points of damage to cripple it, so it has half the amount of weapons. And then you have to do a total of 800 points of damage to actually destroy it. Also, where is it? Movement. The Death Probe can move at any speed from 0 to 32. Has a turn mode of A. Can perform 2 hets at any speed each turn with no chance of breakdown. The Death Probe cannot perform erratic maneuvering as a size class 1 for purposes of triggering mines, and Death Probe cannot enter any atmosphere or land on the planet. So I found that interesting because in my mind, this seems like a perfect monster or ship or scenario if you want to bring in a new player. They just needed to know how to fire. They don't have to do any energy allocation. They can specify, given that they might not know about midterm speed change, which can be introduced relatively quickly, it specifies its turn, its speed at the beginning of turn, and obviously it can do midterm speed changes, but it has to be plotted. You can't do anything on reserve. There is no reserve power for this ship, which is interesting. In a lot of cases, it's not needed. For everything, because it has all the power it needs to fire these weapons. So the survey release to say it's nasty is definitely. Now, it's going to fight a squadron of 600 BPV. And the idea, of course, is that the death probe is going to obliterate the planet. Don't mind me. I'm looking. One thing I forgot to look for, which is the victory condition. If the death probe scores 1,000 points of damage on the planet is destroyed. The planet is destroyed, the death probe wins. If that probe is destroyed, the squadron wins. If both are destroyed, interesting, it is a draw. At each point of damage on the planet kills 1 million sentient beings, the extent of victory will become apparent. So, I think it seems like a really good for a new player. So you don't worry about the EAs. All you have to do is make sure that you know your turn mode, which is turn mode A, and use that to move around. You have a more a player that already knows the game. They can fly the squadron. Though the thing is, the playtester comments. What they're saying is that this scenario is excellent for someone who's just learning to operate entire squadrons. It provides a single powerful opponent with a clear objective defined. A senior, more experienced player could use as a scenario to train players relatively new to the game, which is what I mentioned. Even before I saw the playtester comments, I thought the same exact thing when it comes to teaching, to quote unquote train players. Basically, teach players how to move ships, how to do, how turn modes work, how firing weapons work without having to worry about how do they charge, speed and midterm speed change without having to worry about energy allocation. It's a neat scenario when it comes to that. And I really like that. I love some of the tactics, which is, for the death probe, never forget that the planet is the objective. Crushing ship is all well and good, but the destruction of planets is paramount. Remember that the squadron pilot can sacrifice an entire force if it stops you. So expect them to park right next to you and invite you to finish off their cripples just to try to add the explosion of their ships to your damage. Now, again,
that was the old explosion.
Yes, I know. That's what I was going to point out, which is my guess is this is the old explosion rules, because the new explosion rules, the amount of damage is like, it's a little, it's some something, but it's not that big. It was a lot bigger.
It's nerfed by comparison.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you wouldn't do that now. Now,
of course, on the other hand, no enemy squadron equals dead planet, so.
Real quick. And the tactics for the squadron, prayer is strongly suggested. If you get too close, you'll lose a minimum of one ship on each path. The death probe repels too quickly for finesse. Consider getting some really cheap heavy hitters in there quickly. They will not last, but you have to do major damage quickly and keep piling it on until the death probe goes down or you run out of ships. If you have to hit them with everything, which includes, if available, T-bombs, suicide shuttles, scatter packs, and the peripheral kitchen sink. Yeah, I definitely agree with that, because Just to slow him down, you have to get 600 points of damage. Now, is that possible? Yeah. Especially, I'm thinking of a squadron which is full of feds. You know, that is, you know, the overloaded photon torpedoes, or possibly hydrogen hellbores is a possibility. Obviously, given that the Death Probe has no shield, all the energy goes towards damage. You know, it has no shield, so there's nothing to protect it. And as I think I pointed out, which is it gets to repair 20 points of damage each turn, which is good. So
how many points does it have altogether?
800.
Okay. 600 slows it down, 800 destroys it.
Right.
And it can repair 20 points a turn.
Yep. And Barry's gone.
What? Oh. Good night, Barry, I guess. Hope you're okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be very bad. I'm not. Okay, let's not say that.
If he was driving, he probably just hit a bad cell area.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably got cut off. But anyhow. Yeah, yeah. To me, this looks like a fun scenario to play. You know, that would be interesting. I'm not sure how well they would do. They're staying some of the variations. One of those used two or three space dragons instead of a squadron, and I can see that as a scenario, just for the plain simple reason. I mean, in the Starfleet universe, where it's kind of a realism thing, and that is, you know, that if you have a nesting area on the planet, you know, then the two or three space dragons are trying to protect the planet from being destroyed because of it's going to kill all the babies.
Even better training scenario is if you use the space dragon monster scenario where it is doing something like defending its nest or whatever, and the new player has the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
And actually, if you want to
take it out completely,
and I think if you want to, actually you could actually use it for training two players if you use the dragons, because the dragons, again, they don't
of course that's not game though, but there you go.
Right, but it has some of the mechanisms that need to be taught. Mm-hmm. You know, yep. You know.
Gotcha.
Obviously, the tough part with the I have to double check the space dragons when it comes to turn modes. Yeah. Because they have some special things they actually could do. In theory, they could physically attack it. I think with claw, they can do a claw attack. That dragon wouldn't last for long. It'd be dead pretty quick. Another variant here is, it says, allow the defending player to use a BPV, use the BPV, to establish the defended planet with a minefield, defense satellites, and other ground bases. Player's option how he spends the BPVs. The defending player, in this case, would do well to ensure that he had a number of fighters and or PFs in the defensive force. Otherwise, the Death Probe could just destroy a few installations, move off to long range, make repairs, and then repeat the procedure until one of the arc of the planet is completely defenseless, basically.
You know, if you had multiple players, this would be a good one for having a monitor for one of the new players to play too.
Mm-hmm.
So, as part of the cost for the planetary defense.
Yep. Agreed, though, as I think it's pointed out, the difficulty about using fixed defenses against the death probe is as stated, which is the death probe can actually focus its damage on the one part of the planet, and after it does that, the planet's dead because it can come in without retribution at that point.
Oh yeah.
You know,
well,
and
that's what they're saying, to use fighters, to have a right. good fighter force, because they can go around it.
Agreed.
And they can launch waves of drones into it.
Right. But the thing
and
is...
If you're hydrants, they could have like a wall of phaser Gs.
Yeah. I think... I agree. I think if you're going to play the variation with a defending... a defended planet, I think... One of the best ones would be to have lots of fighters.
Oh, yeah.
Because the big thing about the fighters is that, yeah, fighters can get killed pretty quickly.
But you got a lot of them.
Got a lot of them, and you don't have so many weapons. You got, let me see, 14 direct fire weapons, possibly if you get in too close. 16.
Dude, how about a dozen frickin' Hydran fighters with fusions and phaser Gs? You know, plus a few ships.
Yep.
That would just destroy that thing in like one turn, probably. Be close. Because, you know, probably a dozen points per volley on the phaser Gs. Times, you know, assume 10 of the survive, 10 of them survived the first run.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a lot of damage.
Oh, agreed there. Agreed there.
And the fusions.
Mm-hmm. Up close and personal? Oh, hell yeah. The big thing there, obviously, is I don't know the BPV of the fighters. Oh, I understand that they're relatively cheap. But
for what it's worth, you could actually end up having a ton of fighters for the BPV that they're listing. Yeah, the question is, what do they launch from, you know?
Right. That's why I was thinking of, if it's a defended planet, basically have...
Planetary defenses, yeah.
Yeah, planetary defenses have basically... That'd be interesting overall.
Here you go. Here's a way to defend it. Two small star bases with, you know, Hydrans with full complements of Stinger 2s. Because. He has the even if he blows up one of them to make a blind spot, he's still going to take a lot of damage from the base itself. And then if the fighters can overrun him once, he's probably toast. So, there's a thought.
Understood. Okay, a battle station is 200 points, but it's...
How much is a Stinger 2?
Yeah, I'm looking.
Because remember, those battle stations can have, I think, 3 squadrons each. If I remember correctly.
Right. There's the PS. What is it, Kitty? Or is it something else? Okay. There's our.
I just forget if it's a 6-plane squadron or a 12-plane squadron.
Okay. Okay, let's go for Hydran. Where's the Hydrans? I got the Master. Yeah, that's all feds. Klingons. It's Romulans, Cini, Gorns, and Tholians, Hydrans. Okay, da 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 da. There it is, Stingers. Okay. A Stinger 1, which has max spell speed of 12 and one P3 and two fusions.
You really want this Stinger 2.
Oh, understood. But that's 8 points. Now, if you want Phaser Gs, that would be the one. Okay, trying to get, because there's all kinds of variants here.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Stinger 2s flat out. Yeah, that's the ones you want, the Stinger 2s. 15, max speed 15. Obviously, you have warp booster packs, which costs additional.
But
it costs 10 PPV per fighter. So if you have two battle stations, that's 400 points. You have another 200 points, you got 20 Stingers. That's what you have.
Wow.
And two attack runs, and they're gone.
Yeah, but how much damage can they do?
Yeah, that is true.
Because if you have 20 times, the phaser Gs, that's almost like getting hit with a photon each. And those fusions are going to tear them up too.
So. Oh, agreed. That's one thing. I don't have the chart on me when it comes to. I'm not sure, but I have it. I know someone created the chart. One point, which is
tournament hydrant.
Yeah, well, average damage for each weapon based on range. Like when it comes a phaser one at like range one, the idea is you add up all the possibilities and divide it by six.
Well,
that's your average.
Range one is going to be like 3 1/3. So you're going to do like a dozen plus points, maybe 13,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty significant per times 20. But yeah.
Yeah, actually, the question is how many would actually make it in to the proper range? Because remember,
can that thing be tractored?
No, that's a good question. It has it listed here. I just did not read it. Systems. The death probe cannot be tractored or tractor any object.
Okay. So you can't death drag anything.
Right. It cannot be boarded by boarding parties by any means, even for hit and run raids.
At least with the Berserkers, you could board those things.
True.
The Saberhagen ones. Sorry.
I was confusing that with like Suicide Raiders. Which is an interesting idea.
The thing is, I think this guy, the fighter idea might not be that great because he could just outrun them.
Mm-hmm.
He could keep them at a distance.
Yep.
He can just beat 32 every time until you run them down a bit. He could just run circles around that. And if you put the warp booster packs on the fighters, he could run circles around it and shoot them and do more effective damage because of the booster packs.
Right,
because
it doubles the damage.
Now, here's another question. Does he have to Is there a time limit on this?
No. There's no time limit on this scenario.
And he can't be slowed or stopped. Well, he can be slowed by damage, but he can't be stopped for maneuver purposes.
Right.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's probably get your squadron to point blank range. Take what damage you have to get in there, lose a ship doing it, but yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's a tough one.
Oh. I agree. It's gonna be bloody brutal is what it's gonna be.
But on the other hand, 1 point of damage killing a million people on the planet, that seems a bit much.
Yeah, each point of damage on the planet kills a million people, sentient beings. Hey, that's what they say, you know. Do we think that's a little...
Well, compared to, like, how much damage it does to a ship.
Yeah.
The same weapon systems used against ships.
Right.
That's just like a what the heck on the scale thing.
Oh, I totally understand. I totally agree that I think 1 point is, yeah, no. Definitely would. I think it would take more than 1 point of damage to kill a million people. Sure, they have them stacked up.
Yeah, because any might too good against that. They get two or three drone waves up. Speed 32 drones.
Mm-hmm.
Between him and between the planet and him.
That is true. That would be a good one.
Then again, he can just literally circle. He can orbit that planet at high speed, so. And run out the drones.
Very true. And at that point, there's also, you have the issue of fire control. Sorry, seeking weapon control. Make sure you have enough control channels to control all the drones that you need to, because there's a point where there's so many drones on the board, the best thing that the death probe could do, kill the ship. Kill the ship and like 12, you know, double, assuming it's hitting with double control, then that would be one ship could then also obliterate 12 drones right off the board. Mm-hmm. You know.
But the other side of that is getting close enough to do that.
Right. Agreed. And you've got
these walls, wave after wave of drones between him and the Kazinis. The problem is the Kazini was eventually run out of drones.
Mm-hmm.
Even with reloading the racks. If there's no time limit on the thing.
Right. And then, of course,
if you say 40 turns, you know, a massive fleet shows up and obliterates the thing, then that would be kind of like helpful for the fleet player, but that's a tough one. That's probably one of the toughest ones that we've seen so far.
Oh, I totally agree. I agree that the idea of using the seeking weapons is a good thing. You know, that's why I was thinking about fighters, because of it can be small targets, but the number of weapons by the death probe is very limited. You know, as I said, it's like between 14 and 16 weapons that can fire. I say 14 to 16 when it comes to direct fire weapons, is because two of them are phaser Gs. Phaser Gs are not really that effective outside of range 3. So.
No, there's got phaser 4s.
Oh, yeah.
six photons that are probably, you know, they're, are they fully overloaded?
Well,
or is it his choice?
His choice.
Okay.
Every turn, there's no return with whatever legal loading status or fusing the Death Probe wishes at the instant of firing.
Dude, if I was running the Death Probe, I might consider just an orbit at high speed at like range 25 to the planet and just six photons every turn. Okay, proxies.
Mm-hmm.
Right into the planet. 50-50 shot. Do 12 points a turn. You know.
Oh.
And if they make a run for the ship, well, you know, that's okay. You just overload them the next turn and give them a bunch of phase fours and all those torpedoes.
Agreed. Well, that's...
And turn away and kite them for a bit. Make a big orbit, come back. Get between them and the planet. Just make a run, pass on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep whittling away at the ships. So, I mean, the object for that guy is, depending on the ships that you're facing, it's, if you eliminate all the ships and you have 1 point left, then you're going to win because you can take out the planet. Otherwise, if you can just keep the ships from doing effective damage to you by maintaining high speed and firing at long range, those phaser fours and prox torpedoes, you might actually destroy the planet long before they get you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It would be interesting.
Yeah. It's definitely, I was calculating it out, and it
almost sounds like something you could do on a game day.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. It definitely take a minimum of, not a minimum, a minimum of like eight turns. If the Death Probe is just sitting there firing at the planet and the ships are doing nothing against it, it can get it done in eight turns.
Which they won't. I mean, they'll be trying to kill it.
Right. And definitely the Death Probe doesn't want to sit there and, you know, have it so that the ships are just coming into like range one or range, you know, or range zero and beating on and pummeling it while you're pummeling the planet. You know, you can't completely ignore the ships, but at the same time, as it was mentioned in the tactics, you can't ignore the planet because that is your goal. The goal is to destroy the planet. The goal is not to destroy the ships, because if you destroy the ships and the ships destroy you,
Yeah.
They win.
That would be a pretty close run. So.
Mm-hmm.
And considering that they nerfed the ship explosion thing, I don't know.
Oh, agreed.
You want to just plot that for your staycation? Do it on a game day. Because if you're talking about a squadron, that could be multiple people on one side versus one guy running the Death Probe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. Gotta find a good game day for that.
But anyway, I have a flexible schedule.
I know you have a flexible schedule, and mine's not nearly as flexible. It's going to be fun tomorrow.
Well, I mean, during the week, I do have to take care of the kids, mm-hmm. getting them to from school and all that.
Understood. Okay, well, it's starting to get into that time of the night where I turn into a pumpkin. And before I turn into a pumpkin, I think it'd be a good idea to sign off. Doug, it's always a pleasure to have you around.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Hey, Paul.
Yes?
We just wrapped up Gamers a few weeks ago. I just wanted to let you know
mm-hmm.
that for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
This is the once every 7 years that my birthday falls on the Saturday of Gamers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I asked the venue about it, and they said they are quite okay with us bringing in a cake and whatnot.
Oh, cool.
So I was thinking about doing some kind of birthday little bash thing.
Oh, that'd be great.
Not that that's just an incentive for people to come in, but hey, there'll be goddamn cake. So there you go.
Or maybe a few cakes.
Yeah, or maybe a few cakes. Yeah, yeah, so, you never know. I mean, well, it's like,
you gotta have enough cake for people, everybody, to have a slice. Know,
we used to have the dessert contest,
right,
on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
And that petered out because there was one circle of friends that would come in, and it was like 5 or 6 people that would come in, and they would participate in that very specifically. But that group had a little bit of a falling out between some of the people, and they stopped coming out, and when Mike passed away, that was 2 of them. Not Mike Strain, but
right. I know the Mike you're talking about.
Yeah, and when Mike passed away, his daughter didn't come out afterwards.
I know.
And usually him and his daughter participating in that, along with a few people in that other circle of friends.
Right.
So, but maybe we can put that back up there and say, hey, Doug has a birthday bash. It's not just a cheap way of Doug getting some extra cakes there, but, you know.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, well, definitely Mike is missed. Mike is missed.
Yeah, Mike is very missed. Both of them are missed, at least yeah. by me.
Understood. Well, his daughter's moved on and going off to college and all that, you know. But
I don't think she's done with all that. But life moves on. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, can he?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
and I could easily see her not wanting to come out to that because of the memories.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Okay. Well, you have a good night. So, got to hear the tales of woe from me and how poorly I drove the ship. Hey, come on, I lasted 11 turns, so must not have done too bad. And actually, I did a good bit of damage on his ship. You know, as I said, I think I could have pulled it out if I would have hit with an extra disruptor and knocked out the one torpedo tube, because I think that would have, I feel good that I could have knocked out the other torpedo tube, in which case I think you'd be toast at that point. Obviously, my biggest issue, I had no shields. But when you have actually a Melbourne blast with torpedo, hit you, yes, that definitely does things. Because otherwise, the game, basically, if I would have kept up my speed and able to run away from his plasma, because obviously the one time I got cornered. But if I kept on running away from the plasma, if the question is when, how close do I get in as I'm running away from its plasma? Because that's what you have to do if against developers or any plasmas, is that you have to run them out. So anyway. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.